Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this Sunday morning. Glad to have you along on the Graybar Sports Open Sports on a Sunday morning. I almost messed that up myself. We're in the Stiefel Sports Studio here at KMOX Downtown Studios. Happy to have you along here this morning. We've got a lot to get to. We'll cover a bunch, actually. A lot going on and a lot of fun things going on and getting ready to go on as college basketball is just about a week away from the regular season, so teams getting ready with exhibitions over the last couple of days and during this weekend. College football obviously in full swing, hence the absence of our fair Tom Ackerman, who is, or at least was this weekend in Bloomington, Indiana, I believe, to see his beloved Hoosiers, who continue to put away the competition. They go to 8-0 and 5-0 in Big Ten play as they win yesterday over Washington, so fun for him. And was chatting a little earlier this morning and just talking about the fact that sometimes when you get that kind of surprise, and I don't know that I wouldn't say that Indiana is a shock, but Indiana being 8-0 and being 5-0 in the Big Ten and really just winning the way they have been winning going away, I think is a little bit of a surprise and a fun surprise. And certainly if you are Tom Ackerman or you are the Indiana alums that are in the area, there's a bunch of Indiana alums in the area, by the way. And so I think that's really cool. And I understand that is fun to be a part of. Now then there's the other side, and if you're a Mizzou fan and you expected this team to be top five, top 10 this year, and rightfully so probably, it's been a disappointing season. And that continued yesterday as the Tigers went to Tuscaloosa, taking on Alabama, and were shut out. And that's two now road contests they've played in league play at Texas A&M and at Alabama that they just absolutely haven't shown up. They were nearly shut out at A&M. They were shut out yesterday at Alabama. And now they were at least without Brady Cook for the second half of yesterday's game. I don't think it's going to be long-term. They didn't think that it was going to be a long-term injury. Of course, we know of his homecoming heroics against Auburn when he went out with the ankle sprain after the first drive, and then went to the hospital, came back from the hospital, engineered the comeback and the win against Auburn. No such luck yesterday. They did not have the miraculous comeback for Brady Cook. He left with, again, a hand injury, I believe. Don't believe it is going to be anything that is serious, but it kept him out of the second half yesterday. And without him, the Tigers really struggled. And they struggled against Auburn without him as well. And that's not that I don't think that Drew Pine is necessarily skilled, but Drew Pine hasn't had the reps, and it showed, at least in the Auburn game it showed. I saw that game in person, and it was clear just some of the decision-making wasn't there for Drew Pine. There were so many times when it looked like he wanted to throw, he was going to throw, he did not throw, ends up taking a loss, taking a sack, things like that. So those kind of things hurt, and it's clear that Mizzou, at least at the current moment, is not deep enough to withstand losses to the top of the depth chart as they had. They also did not have Nate Noel yesterday, their running back, their leading rusher. So they can't sustain that. They don't have the depth right now to sustain losses like that at the top of the depth chart. And that showed yesterday again. Drew Pine threw three interceptions in his time in there. And again, they get shut out. They've got to buy a fortunately timed by this week, so they do not have to play until Oklahoma comes to town, and that will be a tough game in of itself, but a fun time for having the Sooners back at Faurot Field. Of course, longtime Big 8 and Big 12 rivals now in the SEC, and so I think that'll be kind of fun, depending on the way that comes out, I guess. It could be kind of fun until kickoff, maybe. I don't know what that one's going to look like, so we'll have to wait and see, but the Tigers get a week to prepare for Oklahoma. Yesterday, Illinois went on the road facing number one Oregon. Not much good news there from the Illini. 38-9, the final score, as they get beat up by Oregon yesterday. They will have a little easier schedule moving forward, so it's going to get a little bit easier for them as far as when you talk about can either of these teams possibly climb into contention for a playoff spot in this new expanded 12-team playoff spot. So there's the opportunity there. They'll have Minnesota next week, and they'll have Michigan State coming up, and then they'll have Rutgers. So the next 3 weeks certainly look like chances for the Illini to come back from this loss, to kind of bounce back. They started the week at 20. They were at number 20 in the AP polls. Mizzou is 21. I think Mizzou probably drops out. I don't know if Illinois drops all the way out. And maybe they stick in the bottom of the poll there. And then again, they've got the opportunity to kind of regain some steam with the schedule they've got ahead of them. Schedule we have ahead of us here on Sports on a Sunday Morning this morning. I'll talk just a little bit of college basketball coming up at 10:15, and we'll look ahead at kind of what's ahead for some of the teams locally on the college basketball scene. We'll continue the college basketball talk at 10:30 when Rebecca Tillett, the head coach for St. Louis University women's basketball, she will join us at 10:30. They've got an exhibition coming up Tuesday. They played an exhibition last Tuesday over at SIUE, and we'll ask her about that. That was a charity exhibition. That's something that a lot of teams are doing right now, is playing that charity exhibition. And it's great, and it's really nice that they're raising a bunch of money in some cases for charities, but it's also a little bit of a workaround because it's the opportunity for Division I teams to face each other in the exhibition season, which ultimately is probably better when you're talking about preparing your team for the regular season. In fact, the Illini today will go on the road. They'll play, their men will play an exhibition, a charity exhibition, but they get to face Ole Miss. So There is a little bit of, not sneakiness, but there's certainly the opportunity for them to play Division I teams, and that's what they are doing via these charity exhibitions. At 10:45, we'll talk to Blues Hall of Famer, NHL Hall of Famer, Bernie Federko, and we'll talk to him about the Blues Hall of Fame, the class of 2025, recently announced by the Blues, so we'll chat with him about that, but also just kind of the state of the Blues. They took one on the chin last night against Montreal. They had a good start to the road trip at Toronto, but then fell last night at Montreal. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little St. Louis City 2. They're in the playoffs, and we'll talk about what that looks like. They're at home this afternoon at City Park to take on the Town FC in the quarterfinals. So we'll talk to Courtney Edmond-Elzey. She is the vice president of ticket sales for St. Louis City, and then we'll have Bernie Mikulas coming up at the end of the program. We'll also talk with Scott Jagow. He's got a really cool story and a connection to the 2024 World Series. So all that is coming up. We'll continue things here from the Stiefel Sports Studio. It's Sports on a Sunday Morning. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman here on this Sunday. We're coming back on KMOX.
Now to Swope out high. Swope eyes it, takes it for three. Bang! Isaiah Swope!
You're going to see a lot of that this year, too. He had 113 of those at Indiana State last year, one of the most explosive perimeter scorers.
So he is just one of the newcomers to the St. Louis University Billikens roster, and somebody that head coach Josh Schertz brought over with him. That is, of course, Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. right here on KMOX. It is Sports on a Sunday Morning. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this morning as we get closer and closer to the start of the college basketball season, the regular season for college basketball. Of course, as I mentioned before going to the break, it is exhibition season. A lot of teams are already playing exhibitions and have already played exhibitions, and that includes St. Louis University, who's already played a couple of exhibition games. They beat up Rockhurst way back on October 18th. That was a really early exhibition, but they beat Rockhurst 86-65. That particular highlight we heard was from the Friday game against Maryville at Chaffetz Arena. Again, heard right here on KMOX, as you can hear each and every Billiken men's game here on KMOX. A 106-65 win on the 25th against Maryville. Everybody, a lot of teams, a couple of teams, I should say, I guess. St. Louis, Mizzou, trying to bounce back, trying to put last year behind it. Now, in St. Louis's case, obviously, as you know, Josh Schertz has taken over, so they make the coaching change last year. Meanwhile, Mizzou is in year number 3 of Dennis Gates as the head coach. They had a surprisingly good year 2 years ago. They had a down year last year, to say the least. They were 0-18 in SEC play last season. So a very tough season last year. They won only 8 games overall last year, Mizzou did. So no place to go but up when you were talking about the Tigers for this upcoming season. And they will start the regular season. They had an exhibition win last night, yesterday afternoon, actually, I think, 90-45 over Lincoln. They will start the regular season on November 4th against Memphis. They'll be on the road at Memphis before coming home for a nice stretch at Mizzou Arena against Howard, Eastern Washington, Mississippi Valley State, Pacific, Arkansas, Lindenwood, Cal. Those are all at home. And then you have a big game coming up in the at the beginning of December as Kansas comes back to Mizzou Arena. That one is going to be crazy. Of course, last year Mizzou went to Kansas. This year Kansas comes to Mizzou Arena. They also will play Long Island and Jacksonville State, all at Mizzou Arena. They have a chance to at least get off to a positive start playing a ton of home games. Before then, the Bragging Rights game comes up on December 22nd. That's going to be a noon start on a Sunday for the Bragging Rights game here in St. Louis at Enterprise Center. Speaking of the Illini, they had a good season last year and are looking ahead to even more success. I even saw, now I can't remember who it was, somebody picked, I think it might have been Jeff Goodman, picked the Illini as their dark horse for a national championship contender. That's how good he feels like the Illini can be this year. Last year, the Fighting Illini, 29-9 during the season. They went all the way to the quarters, they went to the second round, I think is where they lost to UConn last year in the NCAA tournament. So they had a good run, and again, I think it was Jeff Goodman. Now, SIU Edwardsville, coming off back-to-back winning seasons, actually will be at Illinois in that first week of play. They'll play at Indiana. They'll play at Illinois. Those are among the first week games for the Cougars. Then to Indiana State. So a tough start for the SIUE Cougars. Again, coming off back-to-back winning seasons, 19 wins two seasons ago, 17 wins last season for the SIUE Cougars. Brian Baroni is the head coach there. He's coming into his sixth season as the head coach for the Cougars. And again, I have a lot of optimism for the SIUE Cougars after those two winning seasons. Is it going to be tough to start? For sure. But realistically, when you think about mid-major basketball, which is where SIUE resides, when you're not talking about Mizzou, Illinois, even St. Louis University, you're talking about mid-major basketball, the chance for an at-large bid is slim for a team like SIUE. So what you've got to do is get the best seed you can get for the conference tournament, win the conference tournament. That's how you get into the NCAA tournament. Now, the last 2 years, SIUE has won a game at the conference tournament. They've been to the conference tournament the last 4 years. Not everybody goes to the conference tournament in the Ohio Valley Conference. So the Cougars have gotten there. They've won a game, and now it's getting over that hump and winning that conference tournament, which I think is certainly possible in the Ohio Valley. It's a very open league. The Cougars were picked third in the Ohio Valley regular season in the preseason poll. So a lot of optimism in Edwardsville. SIUE will play this afternoon. Missouri Baptist is over at First Community Arena for an exhibition game, 3 o'clock this afternoon in Edwardsville. So I will actually go right from here, right to Edwardsville, and I'll have some basketball on the table this afternoon, which is going to be fun. And college basketball season in general, in my opinion, is one of the best. I can sit down and watch a college basketball game. I don't care who is playing the game. I will sit down and watch a college basketball game and enjoy a college basketball game. We talked about Indiana football. Indiana basketball is going to be good, and I said SIUE will be there. It's actually Indiana's opening night when SIUE is there. That will come up on November 6th. Maybe I'll get Tom Ackerman to come over, and we'll hang out. Maybe I'll have him sit in on a broadcast as we talk about. I don't want him to as the Indiana fan on an SIUE broadcast. Maybe I don't want Tom, but I'd love to see him there. That'll be on Wednesday, November 6th. So that's opening night for Indiana. It's actually the second game of the regular season for SIUE, who will open November 4th with Westminster, a non-Division I team, to open the season on Monday the 4th. And then it's to Indiana and Illinois in almost back-to-back days, Wednesday, Friday, for Indiana, Illinois. The Billikens, as I mentioned, had a big win over Maryville. They then will start the regular season on November 4th. This is I was chatting with Brian Kunderman, who is the sports information director, the media relations director for the Billikens. And the men open the regular season on November 4th in what they're calling the Field of 68 Opening Day Showcase. They will play Santa Clara, but they will do so in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That is a 2 o'clock game. The women will open the regular season with a 5:30 game against the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, South Dakota. So the men are in Sioux Falls at 2. The women are in Vermilion at 5:30, and our man Brian Cunderman's going to do his best to get to both. He's going to go to that game at 2 o'clock. He said he might be a tad bit late for the women's tip at 5:30, but he's going to cover both of those games for the Billikens. So that's kind of cool, though, to be able to see both of your teams get started in the regular season and to do it, obviously, in a different state, but in two different cities in that state as well. I don't think it's quite an hour between Sioux Falls and Vermilion, both on the east side of South Dakota. I've not been to Sioux Falls. I've been through, played a lot at Vermilion because Vermilion, the University of South Dakota, was a team that went through the Division I transition with SIUE, same time as SIUE. So as two transitioning teams, SIUE and South Dakota played a lot. So I spent a lot of time in South Dakota and North Dakota. The University of North Dakota did the same thing. We'll talk more college basketball, more women's college basketball with the head coach of the St. Louis University Billikens. Of course, the Billikens, the defending WNIT champs. And Rebecca Tillett is the head coach at St. Louis University. She will join us next. I'm Joe Pott. We're in the Stiefel Sports Studio. It's sports on a Sunday morning, and we're coming back on KMOX.
Beyond three, Kennedy in the corner. Now to Simon, looking for a cutter. Instead, she goes to Kennedy for three. Hit it. Hits the three from the corner. It's 3-2 SLU on a three-pointer from Peyton Kennedy.
That's Peyton Kennedy. That's last year. That's fifth-year forward Peyton Kennedy. And we are pleased to welcome back to the Sports on a Sunday program Rebecca Tillett. She's the head coach at St. Louis University. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, of course. We are underway, obviously. You've got an exhibition game under your belt already against SIUE last Tuesday. You've got Missouri S&T coming up this Tuesday. I want to start, actually, with that charity game at SIUE. I was talking with the Cougars head coach, Samantha Quigley-Smith. She deferred all the credit to you and your staff as far as the idea, the thought to play that game in Edwardsville last Tuesday. How did that come up?
Well, I mean, she's great. I think it was certainly both of us. You know, this opportunity the NCAA provides for us to play a Division I opponent and choose a charity of our choice is really, you know, something that's good for all of us. And for us, just to keep that common opponent with Coach and, you know, keep fans local. You know, obviously we ended our season in that space and had a really great memory from that, and then the opportunity to get a road exhibition and give our women that chance to go through the procedures that happen on a road game day in preparation for when we open up against South Dakota and Drake on the road.
You raise a really good point, and I don't think a lot of people think about this. When you are starting a new season, when you have a new mix of players, whether you have a new mix of players or not, when you can get your team into that preparation mode, what it looks like to wake up on game day, to have your pregame meal, if you're doing pregame film, all of those kind of things, those routines, if you can get one of those under your belt, that certainly is advantageous, isn't it?
It really is, and I think preparation is so critical. And we do have 6 new members to our team, 4 of whom are freshmen, and all 4 freshmen are contributors on this team. So I think every chance we have to give them the opportunity to think about what it's going to be like, to go through the pressures. You know, I felt like our team was feeling the pressure of opening day on the road, which as a coach I was happy about, right? I was happy that we got that opportunity to feel that prior to it being a contest that counts.
Rebecca Tillett has led this team to back-to-back championships, an A-10 championship a couple of years ago, the aforementioned WNIT championship last season. Coach, your team picked 7th in the A-10 preseason poll. How much stock do you put into those preseason polls?
You know, we always say within our program, we say preseason is for predictions and postseason is for production. And I think our team, right, we're known for, like, really kicking in at the end of the season. Now our challenge to ourselves is we are really looking for sustained excellence. You know, where do we start and finish the entire season with excellence. So I think that's been a really big focus for us, and we think defense is the answer to that equation for us. Our defense statistically improves drastically as the season goes on, and we just want to start at a more solid base with our defense.
You talked about opening the season on the road. You'll actually play four of the first five away from St. Louis in the regular season. That will be a challenge for your team.
It will. I think that's when you're, you know, pleased that you have so many veterans and so many women that have won championships. And, you know, something unique happened this year in terms of our leaders and our captains. You know, never in my career have I had an entire team unanimously vote for the captains. And this year we did. So I think our leadership is in great hands. I think, you know, our returners will help guide our freshmen and newcomers in it. And I think this team is hungry to prove something. And anytime you've got a group of women together that are hungry to compete, hungry to prove themselves, you know, special things can happen.
It says a lot, as you said, when your team can get unanimously behind something. Let's be honest, if you can get a group of college kids to be unanimously behind anything, you're probably doing something right.
You know, I think we could even expand that to any group of people,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Any group of people that can find consensus in that. So that's Kennedy, Calhoun, Peyton Kennedy, and Isabel Tillett. So really excited about what those three already have done for this team and what they will continue to do as we face the inevitable challenges of a college basketball season.
And how much do you lean on those three women to kind of set the tone for what you expect out of a season?
Yeah, great question. So we have a leadership council in our program, and, you know, we meet about every other week. Our women have to write a cover letter and resume to apply to be on it. And then we, you know, either read books or discuss articles, watch videos, and talk about what's going on our team. Those three had a real focus on this summer being a chemistry building summer. And, you know, we often in coaching say team building. They specifically chose the word chemistry to send a message to the team about what they were looking for early. And I do lean on them a lot, and mostly because of all the championship teams I've ever been fortunate enough to coach, when it comes down to it in the championship, the players have to lead. They have to make decisions. They have to have the freedom to think on their own in moments. Coaches, we become more of, you know, we're there, we're a support, but they've got to be able to make high-level decisions in high-pressure situations.
That's really cool. Coach Rebecca Tillett with us. She's in her third season as the head coach at St. Louis University. Peyton Kennedy, who we were talking about, a second-team pick for the All-Atlantic 10 as far as the preseason is concerned. You've also got an all-defensive team member in Kennedy Calhoun, so you do have some veterans, some returners. How important is that when you get set for league play that you've got some returners that have an idea of what that grind of the Atlantic 10 schedule is like?
I think it's really important. I remember when we first came to the league and, you know, veterans in Brooke Flowers was telling us, like, this is what you need to expect in the league. And then now we're at a point where we've been here, you know, sufficient time where Peyton and Ken can really take on that role. And, you know, you can tell freshmen and new players it's a grind every night, but until they really experience it, they don't know. Until, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you experience it. And so I think the trust that Ken and Peyton have built with the team will help us in that space, because I think they really do believe them when they tell them things.
What are you looking most forward to about year three? Is it the fact that now there is a little bit of familiarity with either the league or with St. Louis? Like, what is most exciting for you coming up here?
I think what's most exciting about this team specifically and this year is that it's a bit of a changing of the guard of leadership. So Kyla McMakin had been with, you know, us for so long. It was her fifth year. She was clearly the leader of last year's team in terms of handling things with the team and the locker room and all of that. And now we're in a new phase, and she passed the baton of scoring to Peyton Kennedy. She passed the baton of leadership to Ken, Bell, and Peyton. So I think, you know, watching kind of the next generation is what it feels like. And this group is so hungry and so driven to be great early. You know, it'll be neat to check in again in 2 weeks and see, you know, how did we handle the first road games and what did our team do to respond to those environments.
Coach Rebecca Tillett, thanks so much for some time. I made the comment the other night to Colin Surrey over in Edwardsville. I said I've talked to Coach Tillett a couple of times, numerous times on the radio, and we've never met in person. So I wish you the best. It's Tuesday night. It'll be Missouri S&T exhibition, actually Tuesday afternoon. And then the regular season gets started November 4th. But thank you, Coach, for always spending some time with us.
Well, I appreciate it, and we got to make that in-person thing happen.
We will.
So, take care.
Definitely will. Definitely will. That's Rebecca Tillett. She is the head coach for the St. Louis University Billikens, the women's basketball program, having great success under Coach Tillett, and has some fantastic leadership, as you heard there, coming back here for year number three. One more St. Louis University note before we take a break here. The women's soccer team has their regular season finale today. That's coming up at 12:30. They face Dayton. They're on the road at Dayton. Now, the Billikens have a slim one-point lead in conference play over Dayton. So Dayton has to win if they want to take over first. St. Louis needs just a tie to get a sixth A-10 regular season title in the last 7 years. That is beyond impressive on what the Billikens have done in that regard. They would have hosting privileges throughout the Atlantic 10 tournament, and it doesn't matter what happens today. They will definitely have a first-round tournament game. That comes up Saturday over at Herman Stadium. That's a 5 o'clock game. But a win today or a tie against Dayton, they've got another regular season title, and then they're going to host that entire tournament. So good luck to the SLU women as they finish up their regular season today. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk some hockey with the Hockey Hall of Famer, Bernie Federico. He's up next. It's the Stiefel Sports Studio. It's sports on a Sunday morning. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman, and we're coming right back on KMOX. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman on this Sports on a Sunday from the Stiefel Sports Studio here in St. Louis. Glad you are along with us, enjoying so far our program, and hopefully you are as well. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk a little hockey, some Blues hockey with the Hall of Famer, Bernie Federico. Glad to welcome him in. Bernie, how's it going this Sunday?
It's going great. Beautiful day again here in St. Louis.
Boy, it is nice. No question about it. Before we get into the current Blues, I want to talk to you about the St. Louis Blues Hall of Fame, which just recently announced the class of 2025 with three new inductees coming up in January.
Yeah, very deserving recognition for the three of them. All of them really great St. Louis Blues. In fact, really great players throughout the league. I mean, I got a chance to play, obviously, with Wayne Babbage, was my right winger for a few years, one of the great scorers that we had here with the Blues. And, of course, Jimmy Roberts, I wish he was still here. Not only a great mentor for me when I first started playing, I played with him a year, and of course, he came back and was an assistant coach here when I was doing the TV and this and that. So I a very good friend, and really dearly miss him. And then, of course, Cujo, Curtis Joseph, who I think one of the great goaltenders of all time for the Blues. And I know that a lot of people were always so excited to watch Cujo the way he played. And I know all three of them are, well, Cujo and Babs are very excited about coming back in January for the induction. I know that Jimmy will be watching from upstairs and have a big smile on his face as well.
Bernie, of course, a member of the inaugural class. How important was it to get the Blues Hall of Fame up and going?
Well, I think it's nice. I mean, we've been around a long time. I mean, the franchise has been over 50 years, and I think when you look around the league, you look around sports, I mean, everybody seems to have a Hall of Fame for their players or their management, whoever was part of the organization. So when you see what the Cardinals have done here in town, I mean, it's just a wonderful ceremony each and every year, and I think it was so nice that the Blues kind of watch what the Cardinals did, and they felt that it was time to do it for this franchise as well. So it's very exciting. It's very honoring. Any time you get honored to be a part of a Hall of Fame, it's very heartwarming. It's certainly flattering, and for each one of us that went in the inaugural class, and now each the third one now, every one of the guys has been really delighted to be a part of it.
I can't imagine what it's like to sit on that committee and try to sort through some of these resumes, because, as you mentioned, just this class of the three inductees that are going to go in January, and that's Wayne Babbage and Jimmy Roberts and Curtis Joseph. But you look at all of the Blues and all of the folks that have had such an impact on this franchise, that's quite a task.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there are so many guys that are deserving, and I think that hopefully over time that everybody will get to a chance to be a part of it. I mean, all the players that deserve that, and really the management, coaches, the general managers that have built this organization to where it is right now, it's a special thing, and certainly it's a tough task. I think everybody kind of puts their two cents in, and then take a general consensus of what it's going to be, and it is. It's a tough decision because it's not going to be 10 players or people in 1 year. It's two or three, and it is a tough task, but the three that are going in are certainly very deserved, and it's going to be an exciting day on the 24th of January.
56, I was chatting with somebody else. January 24th, yes, that's the date of the induction ceremony. January 25th, then, is the Blues Hall of Fame game. We're talking with Bernie Federko, the Hockey Hall of Famer. Bernie, let's talk about this current edition of the St. Louis Blues, at least to start the season, a little bit up and down. Yeah, they start their sort of life without Robert Thomas with the 5-2 win in Toronto on Tuesday. They drop a 5-2 game game last night against Montreal. What do you make so far of what you've seen from the Blues?
Well, Joe, this is really a work in progress right now. I mean, I think that we all understood that this team is still in transition. A lot of new faces on the team this year, and I think that's the biggest thing, is that when you have new players coming in, it takes a while for chemistry to build them on the lines. And now, of course, losing Robert Thomas doesn't help a bit at all. But it's really this team has really come together quite quickly. I mean, it was a great game, obviously, in Toronto, going into a really good against a really good team in a tough building and winning that game. It was disappointing, obviously, last night. But I think we're going to see some ups and downs until the chemistry gets better and until everybody understands what exactly their job is and what they need to do each and every time. And really, even with Drew Bannister, I mean, this is his first full year as the head coach, and I think he's probably implementing new systems, new things that they have to do. So it does take a while, but I think the Blues find themselves in a pretty good position. And when they're a game over 500, it's early, and they're in a playoff position right now if the season ended. And so I think you always look at that. I think you kind of want to look at it maybe on a monthly or a quarterly basis, so it's maybe too early. But I like what I'm seeing. I like the effort. I like the way the guys are coming together. So it's been really fun to watch for the course of the first just 9 games.
A lot was made, obviously, of the acquisitions of Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg, and both have come together nicely. When you talk about Philip Broberg, who's nearly a point a game or more than a point a game right now, he's been an impact for this team so far.
He is a really impressive player right now. We didn't know exactly what to expect of him, only playing 82 regular season games in through his career. I mean, he's only 23 years old, but he didn't get to play much in Edmonton. I don't think anybody really heard or saw much of the way he played, but he's been very impressive. He's a big guy. He makes great decisions. He skates very well. I don't think any of us knew, or anybody for that matter, that he would be this involved in the offense. And as you said, to be almost a point a game right now, or a point a game wherever he is right now, it's been very impressive. Although it's, again, we always say it's a small sample size. It's only through 9 games, but I think his upside is really impressive. And I think the offer sheet that Doug Armstrong, this was not just a thought from nowhere. This was a planned, obviously, with his scouts they felt that both these kids were worthy of an offer sheet. And right now, as you're looking at it, it's been a real smart move. And I think that they can obviously be very, very big part of this organization for a long time, the way they play.
Yeah, shrewd move for sure. We're visiting with the Hockey Hall of Famer, Bernie Federko. I want to ask you, too, I heard you on a broadcast recently talking about the goaltending situation, and specifically with regards to Joel Hofer. And you've kind of said this is kind of an important year for Hofer because it's time not just to be sort of that backup, but be a legitimate 1A goalkeeper, 1A, 1B, if you are, with Joel Hofer.
Yeah, that's what he's obviously looking for right now. I mean, he's been in the league. This is his second year in the league. Obviously, he's going to get more games, more starts, and he wants to prove himself. There's no goaltender in the league that wants to be the backup. I mean, it's where you're at. I think it's where you're at on the way up, and maybe it's where you're at when you're on the way down. And right now, certainly, he's on the way up, and he wants to prove that he can be a number one. It's not bad to have a number, as you said, a 1A and 1B, if you can have it on the same team, if you can keep both guys happy, if you can pay them both what they want to get paid. I think it's a really a great spot to be in. But certainly, Jordan Binnington is the number one goaltender right now. Joel is a great backup, and I think that he knows that he has to bide his time, be patient, and he will get more and more starts. And so if these two continue to play like they did last year, I think this will be the best tandem that the NHL has on one team, and I think it's a feather in both their caps.
And we think a goal is coming for Joel sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah, you know, the way he handles the puck, it's just absolutely amazing. Seeing the Gustafson scored that goal here with Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, and Joel has scored a goal in the minors before, and he will get the right situation at the right time. There's no question in my mind the way he shoots it, the way he moves it, that he'll go before his career is over. He'll have one, at least one, in the NHL.
Bernie, great to hear from you today. Great to see you, of course, always on FanDuel Sports Network on the broadcast. The Hall of Fame induction is the 24th, and the Hall of Fame game's the 25th. Appreciate you taking some time this morning.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
That is the Hockey Hall of Famer Bernie Federko with us, chatting about the Blues and, of course, the Blues Hall of Fame. As we mentioned, Wayne Babbage, Jimmy Roberts, and Curtis Joseph making up that 2025 Hall of Fame class for the St. Louis Blues. Great to catch up with Bernie. Great to hear from Rebecca Tillett, the Billikens women's head coach. And we've got a lot more to do here on Sports on a Sunday Morning. We'll come back in hour number two. We'll talk about St. Louis City 2. They're making a run through the MLS Next Pro playoffs. We'll talk with Scott Jagow coming up at 11:30. He's got a cool story to pass along, and kind of a cool connection to the 2024 World Series. We'll chat with him about that. And of course, we'll wrap things up with Bernie Mikolas at the end of the 11 o'clock hour. So there's plenty more to do. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this Sunday morning in the Stiefel Sports Studio. Hour number two of Sports on a Sunday Morning is coming up after the news here on KMOX.
This is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman here on this Sunday morning. Glad you are along with us. Great first hour. If you didn't have a chance to check it out, do so on the Odyssey app. You can rewind. You can listen to that. We had the Hockey Hall of Famer, Bernie Mikolas, Bernie Federko with us here. We will have Bernie Mikolas coming up later. Bernie Federko was with us last segment. We also talked to St. Louis University head coach Rebecca Tillett about her upcoming season for the Billikens women's basketball team. They've got an exhibition coming up on Tuesday, and then they get started November 4th. Monday the 4th, that's opening day for men's and women's basketball. That's the general opening day. Obviously, you don't have to open on that day, but that's when a lot of teams will open. Edmund Elzey is coming up. We'll talk City 2 playoffs. I misspoke earlier, messed up that name. I apologize to Edmund, but we'll visit and we'll talk about what to expect from this afternoon's game at City Park. And I will tell you that it's a great opportunity to go out and see a game at City Park. If you haven't had a chance over the first couple of years with the MLS, with St. Louis City SC, it's a really good chance to do that. The U.S. national team is also coming to City Park again. And we can chat with him about that and acquiring tickets for that one. We will, as I said, visit with Bernie Mikolas at the end of the show. We'll also talk to Scott Jagow, who you just heard doing the news here. And he was hosting this morning on Total Information AM, the Sunday edition. But he's got a really cool connection, I think, to the 2024 World Series, which I didn't know. And I found out this morning. So it'll be kind of cool to kind of chat about that. We talked a little bit, I talked a little bit with Scott during the Total Information program about, so Tommy Edman goes out and hits the home run last night, wins the NLCS MVP. Of course, you know that there are other former Cardinals that have been postseason productive and have done good things for the postseason or for another team in the postseason. And he was asking me just kind of what does that say? What is that telling you? Is that telling you that the Cardinals are doing something wrong? And I think that there's a couple of ways to look at that. And I do think that the Cardinals perhaps have some holes in what they're doing, but that's what they've told us. They've already told us that they are looking into changing the way their development is going, and they're trying to rectify the situation where you have players that are highly successful and productive in the minor leagues and maybe not so as they get to the major leagues. And so that's what this whole change that is coming about is for. But I would also say that there's a little bit of, you know, to be the National League Championship Series MVP, to be a League Championship Series MVP, you need only really to get hot for a week or so, right? Like, I don't think that anybody would say David Freese is a superstar, but David Freese had a heck of a postseason and became the League Championship World Series Most Valuable Player because of a really good stretch of games. And that can happen to about any player. So when you look at a Tommy Edman, it's not, oh boy, the Cardinals really missed it because Tommy Edman went on to win the NLCS MVP. Everybody knew that Tommy Edman was a good player. I don't think that he would be classified as a superstar. I also don't think that you can retroactively say that was a bad deal when the Cardinals acquired Tommy Pham and Eric Fetty. And I realized they turned around and shipped Tommy Pham out very quickly afterwards. Tommy Pham was a toss in there. I know that they said at the time that guys had asked for Tommy Pham and he was going to bring life to the clubhouse, and maybe he did. They were going after the front-end starter, Eric Fetty, and they got that. And they got that by sending out a Tommy Pham who hadn't played in a game during the entire 2024 season to that point. He had been injured. He had not appeared in a rehab game. He had not appeared in the minor leagues. So this wasn't like you weren't saying, boy, we're really going to have to sacrifice. Because the other thing is you have a Tommy Pham in Donovan. You basically have the same player in Brendan Donovan. You have a similar player in Lars Nootbaar. When it comes offensively, I'm talking. Obviously, Nootbaar is strictly an outfielder. So you have a similar player there. So just as you've had a glut of outfielders with Nootbaar and Carlson and Tommy Edman when he was going to be an outfielder, and you've got very versatile players in Brendan Donovan like a Tommy Edman, you had that to move. And so whether it was Brendan Donovan or Tommy Edman, you wanted to get, the idea was to go out and get a starter that you thought at the time was going to push and help you push to a perhaps a postseason berth, which it could have done. It did not do, but that doesn't mean that we should retroactively say that was a bad deal because the Cardinals didn't make the playoffs and Tommy Edman went on to win the NLCS MVP. It might turn out to look even worse if Tommy Edman continues and becomes a superstar, but I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't think Tommy Edman's becoming a superstar. I'm not saying he's not good. He's going to be a solid player. He's going to remain a solid player as he was before, as he is now. But to win the NLCS MVP, it takes only getting hot for a small stretch. That's what he did. That's what Randy Arozarena did when he won ALCS MVP for the Rays. It's a very similar situation. We need to switch gears. We'll talk some St. Louis City 2 playoff soccer, and we'll do so with Edmund Elzey coming up here on the other side of the break. We're in the Stiefel Sports Studio. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning. I'm Joe Pott. In for Tom Ackerman, I'm coming right back on Camo X.
It's a slammer!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this Sunday morning, back in the Stiefel Sports Studio here for Sports on a Sunday Morning. Glad you are up and out and with us. Hopefully you're up and out and with us. But we are going to talk some St. Louis City 2 soccer because they are in the playoffs this afternoon. And we are happy to be joined by Edmund Elzey, the Vice President of Ticket Sales for St. Louis City. And exciting that St. Louis City 2 is again making a run through the playoffs.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yes, it's really exciting. The team has been phenomenal this year, finishing second in the conference. And the crowds have seen it. They've grown by 50%. The games are a fun time. Different vibe than a city game. Much more family-friendly, family-oriented, directed at kids. And I think it's been good for everybody. And the team has flourished with the big crowds and having a lot of fun.
I think that obviously the point you make there, and I've been to St. Louis City 2 games and enjoyed what that atmosphere is like. And it's first of all, it's a great opportunity for folks that maybe for whatever reason they haven't had a chance to get to an MLS game to see City SC. But this is a great chance to check out City Park and see what kind of gem is located there in downtown West, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you live in St. Louis, you may not know this unless you're like me, been to a lot of other MLS parks, but we have the best stadium in the country. There's no doubt about that to me. And this gives you the chance to access the stadium for a relatively inexpensive price. Tickets are $13. And it's easier to take your kids. Like, it's not fully packed like a city game, and it's a lot of things going on. You can relax a little bit more. You can spread out a little bit more. So it's cool. It makes it a little bit more accessible for different people.
Yeah, and I think obviously that's the key, right? For mom and dad who are looking for something fun to do with the family, something to, you know, a good way to get out of the house. The weather, you could not ask for a better afternoon today. Mm-hmm. It's a 4 o'clock yep. kick. That just a great way to go out and do that. Let's go right here. What's the best way for folks to get tickets for this afternoon's game against the town?
Well, you can go directly to our website and click on tickets there. You can go directly to SeatGeek and find tickets there to search City 2. There's, if you follow us on social, City 2 actually has their own X page. They have their own social media, Instagram. We link ways to buy tickets on those pages as well. So any of those ways work. $13, it's pretty easy to do.
I think there is there tends to be a draw as well with, like, whether it's minor league baseball or whether it's MLS Next Pro, and the opportunity maybe to see some rising stars. And it's certainly you're not guaranteed that you're going to see these guys someday in the MLS, but there's a good chance you're going to see some of them in the MLS. And to get a chance to see some of these players on the rise, I think there's a certain draw to that as well.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of City 2, is that it's a little different in minor league baseball, in my opinion, because there's a lot of first-team guys who maybe they didn't get enough minutes before. They'll go down and play City 2 for that weekend or whatever, so that way they can get conditioning. So there's been a number of teams, like Jose Kadima, a number of players, that have had a chance to play for City 2. And so you're seeing first-team guys there. But then you also see the up-and-comers like Mekhi Joyner and Caden Glover and guys who are going to be part of our future. They're also a part of the team. So you get to see both of them pretty frequently. It's in baseball, which you get to see a lot of up-and-comers, but you don't get as many people from the first team or the top team that are going to play down as you would with something like this.
Yeah, that's a great point. Edmund Elzey, the Vice President of Ticket Sales with St. Louis City, with us again. 4 o'clock today, they're in the playoffs. St. Louis City 2 is in the playoffs. They'll take on the Town FC, which is San Jose's MLS Next Pro affiliate. Let me ask you this too, because coming up here in November, you've got the national team back at City Park. It's the Nations League quarterfinals. It's actually the opportunity to see Mauricio Pochettino's American debut with the U.S. team. So his debut on American soil at City Park. Can folks still get tickets for that?
Yes, they can. We played Jamaica that day, and like you said, it's part of a bigger tournament, and they can go on. This is a little different, but you go to Ticketmaster for those tickets. So you just search the USA national team, City Park, and you can get tickets to that match for that day.
And that, again, I think speaks to what you said earlier of what we have here in St. Louis and City Park in such a phenomenal facility. Obviously, the national team is not bringing its team and certainly not bringing its brand new head coach to a park that they don't believe that should be showcased, and as City Park will be showcased.
For sure. I mean, they're not dumb. They know what the fan base is. We have the best soccer fans in the country. So they know if they want to have good support and, you know, good foundation of a base of people who are going to come out. St. Louis is a really good option for them. And so it's no surprise they've been here, what, three times already. And we have women's national team. And I think this is going to be a frequent thing as we, you know, as we continue forward.
And I should mention, too, there's been college soccer there. There's going to be college soccer. The Women's Big Ten Tournament is coming to City Park. Of course, St. Louis University and SIUE have played there the last 2 years. All again, things that hopefully folks realize about what they've got in City Park.
For sure. The stadium is for the community. This is all in the ownership's vision, was to make sure that we had events that can help the community and bringing in, obviously, MLS here was important, but also these ancillary events like the Bronze Boot, like the Big Ten Tournament, like USA National Men's and Women's are also equally as key as far as keeping City Park busy and keeping things going around that part of the city.
Edmund Elzey, thank you so much for taking some time. Again, St. Louis City in the playoffs this afternoon in the Western Conference quarters against the Town FC. That's a 4 o'clock start, but I appreciate you taking some time to chat with us today.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys promoting us and talking about us, and so thank you so much.
You got it. You can go on to the City 2 website. You can go on to SeatGeek to get tickets for that one. We'll talk with Scott Jagow, Camo X newsman extraordinaire, coming up on the other side of the break as Sports on a Sunday Morning continues. I'm Joe Pott, in for Tom Ackerman, coming right back. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman on this Sports on a Sunday, a beautiful Sunday morning here in St. Louis. And of course, it is the fall. It means World Series. It is without the Cardinals in said World Series or postseason. We have a classic matchup of the Yankees and the Dodgers. And I was saying before I went to break, sometimes you hear these, you hear folks that will claim that they have been a Yankees fan or a Dodgers fan or whatever the case is, right? And you're just sort of like, yeah, right, really? That is not the case for our next guest. You know him. You love him. It's Scott Jagow, who is just here on Total Information AM Sunday. And Scott is sporting his Dodgers hat as he sits in here today. But it is not fair weather. It is not anything like that. You have a cool connection to the 24 World Series.
Yeah. Well, my dad grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers fan because his dad was a Yankees fan. So he wanted to not be a Yankees fan when he was a kid. He wanted to go against his dad, so he decided to pull for the Brooklyn Dodgers. And he lived in Buffalo, New York, across the state, but that was back when both teams were in New York City.
Yep.
And then they've obviously moved to L.A. But when I was born a Dodgers fan. And I remember the first memories I have of being a Dodgers fan was the 77 Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, 3 home run series. Then the Bucky Dent, lost both of those series. But then we got revenge in 81 with Fernando Valenzuela. Rest in peace. He was my favorite player at that time. And the biggest memory I have of being a Dodgers fan is the 1988 World Series. I was in college and I was at a fraternity party or something like that, some party. But it was the Dodgers playing in the World Series, so I left that damn party so I could go to my dorm room and watch a little tiny TV.
Amazing.
with my batting helmet, Dodgers helmet. So it was a batting helmet, not a ball cap. And when the Dodgers were down 4-3, I turned it around into a rally, a rally helmet. My sweet mate was a Dodgers fan, but he went to bed. So he was a fair-weather Dodgers fan.
Like all those brake lights you see, all those
exactly.
People leaving Dodger Stadium that will then claim that they were there. And
when Kirk Gibson hit the home run. I mean, that moment was probably my favorite moment in sports. I remember jumping up and screaming and running into my sweet mate's room and pushing him basically off the top bunk. It said, the Dodgers just won. Kirk Gibson hit a home run. And he was in his underwear, and we started running around the dorm. Like yelling and screaming at the top of our lungs. And so, you know, you don't get many moments like that until Friday night. And we got another one with Freddie Freeman's grand slam.
I think it's so cool. And I think baseball lends itself to this. It's funny that your dad wanted to sort of be anti his dad, but you born a Dodgers fan, as you said, and in lockstep with your dad.
True. And later in life, it was serendipitous. I moved to Los Angeles when I was in my 30s. So I had been a Dodgers fan, you know, from the 70s all the way up until the 2000s. And I actually got to live in L.A. just a couple miles from Dodger Stadium and go to games regularly. There was a bar called The Shortstop just down the street.
Oh, that's...
And you would go there and pregame. And then to walk into Chavez Ravine, it is straight uphill for a long way. So you get your exercise, but we would go to the shortstop and then climb the hill. Beautiful stadium. And by the way, Dodgers fans are awesome. Back in the day, I know you could make an argument there was a, you know, the celebrity crowd and getting there late and leaving early because of the traffic. I mean, it really is that bad, the traffic. But over the years, the crowd has gotten more and more energized, and the Latino population definitely has something to do with that. But they show up early. And they stay late.
And which probably was brought on a lot by Fernando Mania.
It was, actually, because...
For sure.
Because when the stadium was built, they displaced all these Hispanic families, and it made the Hispanic community furious. Fernando brought them back. He was the bridge. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's when it started.
How cool. And I think people can get that, right? And people in St. Louis can get that, because that's how most of us, if we're born and raised in St. Louis, were generations of Cardinals fans. I was, my dad was, his dad was. I mean, that's what I knew. And I think that's, you know, a similar story, the same story as what you're saying with the Dodgers. And that's why I think, again, And I know it happens in other sports. It's so prevalent in baseball to have the generations of fans that I don't think you see as much in other sports.
Yeah, and being in St. Louis, I mean, I've lived in a couple of different baseball cities. Cincinnati, a great baseball town. St. Louis, a great baseball town. And I appreciate the fandom here. And, you know, I pull for the Cardinals when they're not playing the Dodgers.
Sure, yeah.
I pulled for the Reds when I lived in Cincinnati. And my Dodger fandom, to be fair, waned a bit. It definitely waned throughout the 90s. It was the 1994 strike that really ticked me off. And us getting a free agent like Daryl Strawberry, that really made me mad. Because the Dodgers were homegrown until then. They were the homegrown team. They had the best farm system for many years. In fact, from 79 to 82, they had the Rookie of the Year in the National League every single year. I mean, it's just incredible to the players that they produced out of Albuquerque.
And then there was another stretch where you have Karros and Piazza. There was yep. another stretch where they had a good run of rookies of the year. Same kind of thing that ultimately ended up, obviously, Piazza getting shipped off. And that was right, actually, when the ownership change came, when the O'Malley family was transferring ownership to the Fox Corporation.
And when I moved to L.A., it kind of reinvigorated my fandom.
Yeah.
But I can also see why people from the outside hate the Dodgers because of their bankroll, you know, the whole Hollywood thing. And I get it. But living as a Dodgers fan and being out there and knowing the kind of fans that fan base is, I mean, I think it's a little bit misplaced. It certainly shouldn't be on the fans. They're really good. And actually, the Dodgers have underperformed over the years. I mean, they won the 88. They didn't win until 2020 again, yep. which was the pandemic season. It almost has an asterisk. So I feel like this team looks to me like a winner, but I am a little nervous. First of all, Shohei Ohtani being out. But not just that. The last two times the Yankees and Dodgers have been in the series, one team has gone up 2-0, and both times that team lost. So I'm a little concerned. But, I mean, the Yankees are even easier to hate, right?
And so that was going to be the point that I was going to make, too. I think that you find that with the Cardinals, and I think the common denominator is successful franchises. You have the two top teams in the National League would be Los Angeles and the Cardinals. Los Angeles has the second most league championship series of any outside of the Yankees. The Cardinals, they lead the National League. The Cardinals right behind them. The Cardinals, of course, the second most World Series titles behind the Yankees, of course, who are running away with that. But I think that's why, you know, everybody wants to hate the team at the top, I guess, which maybe the Cardinals won't. They don't have to worry about that for a couple of years, maybe.
Well, hope not. Right. I hope they bounce back. We thought that was going to happen this year. And we are seeing some former Cardinals perform very well in these playoffs. I mean, that's kind of bittersweet. It's a business, as we talked about earlier this morning. It's a business, and players don't stay in one place forever, money, contracts, and all that stuff. But it is fun, though, to see Tommy Edman, because having watched him here and now seeing him perform for the Dodgers is really fun, because I feel like I know more about him from his time here.
Jack Flaherty, too. And for Jack Flaherty. I mean, like, you can't – how do you feel – how can you not feel good for a kid who was, you know, 9 or 10 years old in his Dodgers uniform pitching in the backyard, and now he is starring for them in Game 1 of the World Series?
And the Dodgers have – their players are performing. Their players are performing in the clutch. And I'm sorry, but Aaron Judge ain't.
Right. That's a great point. No, you're exactly right. And the hate of the Yankees, that's what fuels me. I mean, it's like, it's the Yankees. And especially because after the run that they had in the late 90s going into the 2000s, I was just like, oh, anybody but the Yankees. So now it's funny because I know someone who's born and raised, longtime Yankee fan, and he made the point that, like, this is like the first time — he's much younger — this is the first time in his life that he can really enjoy the Yankees getting to the World Series, which is, like, you think about it, oh, it's actually been a while.
Yeah, 2009 for them, and 43 years since Yankees-Dodgers. They played 11 times before this, most of it before my lifetime. I mean, three of them were in my lifetime, but the rest were 60s, 50s, 40s. And it was the best and biggest rivalry in baseball, I would say, in sports. And so for the younger generation, it's a chance to see that rivalry on the biggest stage when it just hasn't happened in so long.
It's been three in my lifetime, too, but I'm younger than you are. So literally, I was one day old after when the 77 series ended. So like I don't remember that, but I only know just being a baseball guy and enjoying the history of the game and understanding that rivalry. I do think that's obviously a draw. Why would it not be? So, and it goes back, obviously, to Brooklyn and New York.
When I was young, my dad took me to my first professional baseball game, and it was in Atlanta against the Dodgers. Atlanta was playing against the Dodgers, and that was great, man. And Dusty Baker was my favorite player.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I have great memories as a kid of being a Dodgers fan. And like I said, and then when I lived in L.A., I enjoyed it a lot. In between, I've been a little soft on the Dodgers for several reasons. So it's not like my Buffalo Bills fandom.
Right.
I do not miss 1 second of a Buffalo Bills game ever in the last 40-plus years. And I think I would trade all Dodgers North Carolina championships for one Super Bowl.
Man.
I mean, I'm serious.
That's
how much I love the Bills.
A long-suffering Bills fan.
I just want one.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to share that story. I think it's really cool, and it was just something that I did not know until we chatted about it this morning.
Yeah, I thought it was fun to bring out the Dodgers cap.
I like it.
This one's getting it's aged. You can
that's
tell,
okay. So. Hey, that's a good. I know how that works too. You gotta have it. You gotta have a
broken
good fit
in
on.
For sure.
Yes, yes. Well, Scott Jagow, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Scott Jagow with us here. We've got just one segment to go on Sports on a Sunday Morning. That will be with Bernie Mikulas, and it's coming up on the other side of the break. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman in the Stiefel Sports Studio on Sports on a Sunday Morning, and we're coming right back. It's Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman on this Sunday morning, a gorgeous Sunday here in St. Louis. One final segment here on Sports on a Sunday Morning. And as always, we're pleased to welcome in Bernie Mikulas to our Sunday program. And hopefully it's been a good Sunday for you, Bernie.
Yeah. You know, I ate some biscuits for breakfast.
Dang.
Some good coffee.
I like it.
Outstanding, Joe. Outstanding. Thank you.
Really nice. So, you were just chatting off the air, actually. I wanted to bring up that if fans and sports fans don't know and don't realize, you and Kevin Wheeler and Tom Ackerman and Matt Pauly, you've been having kind of a sports roundtable discussion. And it's been every couple of days. It's going to go, I think, a little bit more regular coming up. But it's kind of cool to see you guys kind of kick around the topics of the day.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of these on Mondays. We won't be doing one tomorrow, but we'll resuming on November the 4th, which is a week from tomorrow. And it's a round table with the four of us, and usually goes about 45, 50 minutes. And we have a ball. And, if you follow KMOX Sports on X, you can find it. You certainly find it on the station. And the plan is to do several of these each week, and they're a lot of fun. So it's like a all hands on deck KMOX round table. So I can't wait to do every one. They're so much fun. Thank you, man.
Yeah, no shortage of topics, obviously, to get into. And something that I've been thinking about, that I keep seeing, I've talked about it a couple of times on this on the show already today, but the idea that Tommy Edman wins NLCS, and oh my gosh, the Cardinals did it again, and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like that is just a lazy narrative when you can say, yes, I get it, Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia. But the fact is, none of these three are superstars. It's not like the Cardinals legitimately cast away someone who's a superstar, but all three of these guys managed to get hot for a series.
Well, the thing of it is, postseason baseball, it exists for a lot of reasons, but one thing it definitely does, it gets everyone to completely overreact. I mean, and whether it's good or bad, like, for example, we all know Aaron Judge is struggling mightily in the postseason. He's 1-for-9 in the World Series with 6 strikeouts. He's having a really, really hard time. But here's the deal. That can also happen in the middle of May, or it can happen in late June. It's baseball. Sometimes you have a stretch of games where you look like Babe Ruth. Other times, a stretch of games as a hitter, you look like Pete Cosma. I mean, baseball does that. So, yeah, everyone goes bananas over Tommy Edman. And listen, I'm really happy for him. Don't get me wrong. He's a wonderful guy. But you know what people forget about? And so I'm with you on this part. You know what people forget about? Tommy Edman had 15 postseason games for the Cardinals, and he hit .224. And he had a really good series against Atlanta when they won the NLDS. And after that, like his last 10 postseason games as a Cardinal, he hit under .200. Does that mean that he was a bum? No, it doesn't mean he was a bum. It just means he was hot for a few games, and then he went ice cold. That's baseball, man. That's baseball. I don't know why that's so hard to understand. It's, you can't take a handful of games and define a hitter with that. If you're biased and you want to, I understand the frustration with the Cardinals. Don't get me wrong. But, when people dredge that up as if like the Cardinals made some just incredible, incomprehensible mistake. No, they actually didn't, because Tommy Edman would not have been here. There's no way he would have been a Cardinal after next season, for sure. So, I think it's – I'm not into that either. I think our town – I do it too. Listen, man, I'm guilty. I think our town really obsesses way too much about former Cardinals.
We do indeed. Let's chat a little Mizzou football, because
just kidding.
It feels like because I contrasted this. Tom Ackerman's enjoying this great run with his Indiana Hoosiers, and it's it's always so much fun when kind of you get that surprise of a great season. Of course, the other side of that is you expect a great season and you get disappointed. And that's obviously where I think Tigers fans are. But it's clear that if nothing else, this team cannot sustain losses at the top of the depth chart. They don't have the depth to do that.
They're by the way, I texted Tom Ackerman this morning, and I said, Aki, I was thinking about something. You're Indiana Hoosiers. They're having the season that Mizzou was supposed to have.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
The Mizzou offense is just shut down. And listen, don't get me wrong. There's a drop-off when Brady Cook's not playing and Drew Pine is in there. Okay, there's a drop-off. But I have to be totally honest about this. Brady Cook was not playing well. He had that wonderful comeback. That was a wonderful moment. It was a wonderful scene. Everything about that Auburn performance was great. But I'm talking about the overall body of work this year. Brady Cook has not been – he's one of the least accurate quarterbacks in power conference football, and Drew Pine is worse. But if you look at Mizzou just in terms of their passing accuracy this season, both of those quarterbacks together, Mizzou's down there near the bottom in terms of power conference teams. And I'm not talking about completion percentage. I'm talking about on target rate, catchable ball rate, things like that. This offense has just gone kaput. I mean, it's amazing to me that in their games, they've played five games against other power conference teams, and they're only averaging 17.5 points. Last three games against power conference teams, they've averaged 10.3 points. I mean, this offense has just dried up. And yeah, it's harder without Brady Cook, but he wasn't exactly setting the world on fire either. He really wasn't. And his performance, if you contrast his numbers, and you know I'm a numbers guy, if you contrast his numbers last season to this season, it's like two different quarterbacks talking about Brady.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is disappointing, obviously, for where we at least expected, or the expectations that were there, and now to see them unrealized this year.
And Joe, it's really frustrating overall. But and they're completely wasting Luther Burden.
Yeah. I mean,
he had five touches yesterday. And, you know, for a grand total of, I think, 18 yards. And if you look at, again, I'm not going to go through all these numbers, but I was studying this morning, like his production level is like, you have to look way down the list. And I'm talking about all power conference receivers to find him, because he's just not getting much business. And what a travesty that is, to have a player that gifted and you can't utilize them because you haven't been, number one, you're not calling the right kind of plays. You're not creative enough in how you use them. And then the two quarterbacks can't get the ball to him with any kind of reliable measure.
Yeah, I do think it extends to not utilizing him enough, not targeting him enough. I was at the Vanderbilt game, and I mean, the first play, I think in overtime, was that play to the corner for him, and everybody around us is, where was that all day? Because they don't even call those plays.
No, that's right. And I don't get it. I always check out what fans are saying, because I respect them, and I want to know, kind of pick up on the vibe. And one of the things I saw after the game yesterday and again this morning, and I agree with it, you know, sometimes we all go too far in having like an overly emotional reaction to bad stuff like this. But a lot of Mizzou fans are saying, you know, Kirby Moore's not having a good season either. You know, the offensive coordinator who was brilliant last year. I have no idea what they're trying to do on offense. I really don't. And maybe the offensive line's not as good. But to come out yesterday, Brady Cook is not 100%, and you don't even try to run the ball to let Alabama know you're going to do it. I mean, they can't keep the pass rushers off Brady Cook. And so, but you're going to give them nothing else to worry about or think about. You're just going to open up the game, pass, 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 and it was a disaster. I don't understand that. And so Kirby Moore's having a bad year, and frankly, Eli Drinkwitz is having a bad year. This team was set up for success. All the ingredients, everything in the formula was made for a big, big, big season, a playoff-type season. But they have not played well at all on the offensive side of the ball. And here we all were worried about the defense, which I don't really have a problem with, the way they've hung in there pretty well. So it's been a bad year for the coaches and just the offense in general, the coaches on the offensive side plus the head coach.
Bernie, always a pleasure to catch up, and I know that we'll continue to do so, and fans can look for that next roundtable coming up on November 4th.
All right, Joe, always good to talk to you, man. Be well.
You too. I appreciate it, as always. Bernie Mikolas with us here as he wraps up our Sports on a Sunday Morning program, as he always does. Good show for you today. Thanks so much to Drew Young, who is behind the controls, but also has a lot to do with putting all this together beforehand. Appreciate Tom Ackerman letting me sit in his seat here for the Sunday program. Rebecca Tillett was with us. Bernie Federko was with us. Scott Jago was with us. We talked some St. Louis City, too, with Edmund Elzey, and of course, Bernie Mikolas, and you can go back and listen to all of that on the Odyssey app, and I would urge you to do just that. Great show today, and we'll talk to you down the road here, as we always do. It's Sports on a Sunday Morning. It's a Sunday morning tradition. Joe Pott for Tom Ackerman. Have a great Sunday, everybody.